ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 14 आइडियल फैमिली लाइफ टेक्स्ट नंबर 11। आश्वघन्ते अविश्यभ्या कामान् सविभजेत् यथा अपि एकामात्मनो दाराम् नृणां स्वत्वग्रहो यतः। Translation proper by Srila Prabhupada. Dogs, fallen persons and untouchables, including chandals, dog eaters, should all be maintained with their proper necessities, which should be contributed by the householders. Even one's wife at home, with whom one is most intimately attached, should be offered for the reception of guests and people in general. Purport. Although in modern society, the dog is accepted as a part of one's household paraphernalia, in the Vedic system of household life, the dog is untouchable, as mentioned here. A dog may be maintained with proper food, but it cannot be allowed to enter one's house. What to speak of the bedroom? Outcasts or untouchable chandals should also be provided with the necessities of life. The word used in this connection is yatha, which means as much as deserved. The outcast should not be given money with which to indulge in more than they need, for otherwise they will misuse it. At the present moment, for example, the low-class men are generally paid quite amply. But instead of using their money to cultivate knowledge and advance in life, such low-class men use their extra money for wine drinking and similar sinful activities. As mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chatur Varanyam Maya Srishtam Gunakarma Vibhagashah. There must be four divisions of human society according to the work and qualities of men. Men with the lowest qualities cannot do any work that requires higher intelligence. However, although such a division of men must exist according to their work and quality, it is suggested herewith that everyone must have the necessities of life. The communists of the present day are in favor of supplying the necessities of life to everyone, but they consider only the human beings and not the lower animals. The Bhagavatam's principles are so broad that, however, that it recommends that the necessities of life be supplied to everyone, man or animal, regardless of good or bad qualities. The idea of giving one's own wife to the service of the public is that one's intimate relationship with his wife or one's excessive attachment for his wife, by which one thinks his wife to be his better half or to be identical with him, must gradually be given up. As formerly suggested, the idea of ownership, even of one's family, must be abandoned. The dream of material life is the cause of bondage in the cycle of birth and death, and therefore one should give up this dream. Consequently, in the human form of life, one's attachment for his wife should be given up as suggested herein. We are reading this chapter on ideal family life. Of course, in this world, in this age and era we are living in, everything is very, very far from ideal. However, that does not mean that we don't have to try to make it ideal. Everyone knows it's going to rain in monsoon. Doesn't mean that we should not buy a raincoat and an umbrella. We should buy one and be prepared to face the vagaries of the weather. Similarly, things are pretty bad in very, very far from ideal family life. Anyone can see around the hell which is going on. But as we know that Bhagavatam is the guiding torch, the guiding principle, the light in this age, Krishna himself reincarnated to show us a path towards, which will take us towards everything being ideal. Ideal rulers, ideal family life, ideal varnashram, ideal everything. So, what is really the concept of ideal family life? What are we really talking about? Of course, here Prabhupada goes into details of specifics of maintaining the responsibility of the ideal family life being also to take care of a lower caste and things like that. However, today we'll try to delve on a little more broader principles involved of what actually constitutes ideal family life. When we talk of family life, of course, we will not restrict our discussion to just family as we know it as father, mother, and children, or maybe in-laws or grandparents. Family is a broad concept. Family is a universal concept. Because there is a family at every denomination of society. Like we have a family of brahmacharis. Right? Now there is no father-mother sort of thing here. But there is still a family concept. That we are all a family of aspiring renunciants. Or the counseling system which we call. So the whole counselor system is a huge family. So many counselors, and each counselor has his own 30, 40, 50 counselors. It's a family. When you go on a yatra, for example, whether it is 200 or 2,000, 4,000, whatever, it's a large family, all going together as one unit. Family means basically where there is one unit. They say, you know, Sahara Parivar, Sahara. We also use this concept in our hospital. We say Bhakti Vedanta Parivar, the Parivar of hospital employees. So wherever we go, this concept seems to be very interesting because everyone is talking about this family thing. So we can see that to make things more cohesive, to make things more operational, make things more smooth, there has to be the spirit of family. We have often been told that this comes from the spiritual sky. The whole concept, this material world is a bimba, pratibimba. You know, that reflection of the originality. Nothing here is original, nothing can be original. Everything is a reflection. So a family concept is everywhere. This whole world is a family, right? Don't we say that? The whole world is a family. The earth family. People who are very broad-minded think like that. People are there, not many, but people do think, the earth family, what is the earth going to inherit? What will the earth people inherit in the future with all this global warming and all these problems? What will the next generation inherit? So think of the whole world. So where does this concept come from? It comes from the original family where Krishna himself declares himself to be Aham Bija Pradaha Pita, where he himself accepts the role of being the father. And of course, Prabhupada says, Srimati Radharani or Lakshmi Devi is our original mother. So the family concepts comes from there, right from the upper level. Vrindavan is like a family. We know, we read from Bhagavatam, that everyone is thinking of Krishna, everyone is thinking of the welfare of the entire unit. when the demons attack, they are not thinking of their own limited, okay, let's run away from here because, you know, so many demons are coming. So nobody made an escape on himself. Nobody said, okay, now, enough. My children are really in danger, you know. No, there was no concept of any separatist idea whatsoever. Upananda Maharaj came, Nanda Maharaj was called in, five brothers met, there's a discussion of senior members and said, what does the entire family of Brijbasis do now? Okay, sir, we should shift now from here to Vrindavan, from Gokul to Vrindavan. Of course, they shifted many, many places, five, six places. So we can see that everyone thought of each other's welfare, not thinking of his own individual welfare, right? The joint welfare. So the most important concept which makes the family really operational is a principle of interdependency. If any family has to work, if it has to fulfill the purpose of that particular unit, it can never happen ever if just people just come together on the physical platform. You just 100 brahmacharis are coming together, it will be a family. If just four people are living under in the same flat, will it be a family? No. We know it doesn't really happen. People fight so much. But if there is understanding the principle of interdependency, let us talk about that a little bit. That means that the husband or the father knows that he is dependent on his wife. In so many ways, is it not? Every father knows. All of us have come from families. We knew that the wife performs so many duties in the house. Cleaning the house, taking care of the children, keeping it, cooking for the family, maintaining the actually entire spirit of the family, taking care of the in-laws, doing all the household chores and so many things. You know, the list of what a woman may do in the house may be very, very large, usually not appreciated by most men who have this male egoistic tendency. They are doing everything. What are you doing at home all the time? You're just at home all the time. But it's not true. When the wife doesn't work, and the story is there. So the husband comes home and said, everything is in a mess. And so what happened? No, you are at home only, so how nothing happened. So I did not work today. As it is at my house, I'm not supposed to do, I'm not doing nothing. No? So when I don't do nothing, this happens. So the husband realized, wow, this whole house is in so much mess. Clothes are not washed. Nothing is in this place. And of course, the wife understands that how an important role I may be playing, but without the husband, I am incomplete and I am dependent on the husband for his support, protection, maintenance spirit, and so many other things. Children, again, they're dependent. But again, it's not that the children are dependent. Even the parents depend on the child, because without them, they feel like we have a family who's staying next door to us. They lost their 18-year-old son from a terrible cancer. And they don't have any daughters. They don't know their siblings. So they feel, they were crying and moaning, said, who will maintain us? Who will take care of us? You know, our life is useless now. So they were dependent on the child for giving them that sort of a feeling of fulfillment and value to their life. So everyone is interdependent. Now, beginning with that, if you extend this logic of interdependency, we will see that it is applicable everywhere in the entire creation. Everywhere. Talking about Varnashram here. Now, there are four ashramas, is it not? Four Varnas. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So, we can see that all ashrams are interdependent. Suppose there are no Shudras. Usually we look at Kalasudra Shumbhava. Like, you know, rejects. But they play such an important role. Who is going to serve the higher three castes? You know, all the palaces to be built, all the factories to be built, or whatever, all the roads to be maintained, and all the trees to be planted. And who's going to do all that? Not the king, not the brahmanas. Right? The vaishyas, without money you can't do anything. Who's generating the money for the entire four ashrams? The generation of money is done by the vaishyas. Who's going to protect everybody from dangers which are always going to be there? Kshatriyas. I was going to give direction to the entire group, the Brahmanas, right? So, the Brahmana also need protection from the Kshatriyas. They need some charity. So, the Vaishya had to generate some money also. As what, who will give them charity? Otherwise, just doing all the kathas and pujas and no dakshina is there. Just puja and, you know, yajan, yajan, or kuch nahi. No dan patigraha, kuch nahi. So, money should be generated to, for them to, you know, earn and all that. So, we can see each one of them is again interdependent. But the whole system is, but in independence system, there's always a person who is supposed to be like most important. There is one most important. So, everything is designed to ultimately serve the Brahmanical culture. Just like in the body, now which organ is more important? Is the heart more important? The kidney more important? The brain more important? Now, if you look at the human body, which is a microcosmos, a micro universe, then every organ depends on other organ. Every organ. The teeth, you know, nobody talks great about the teeth as being very important organs. Heart, very important. Cardiologists are biggest paid people because they're maintaining the biggest, most important, valuable organ of the body. Most lucrative field in medical science is cardiology, cardiothoracic surgery. But look at the health of a person who doesn't have proper teeth. The guy is getting all caries and all loose teeth. And not able to chew his food, first of all. He cannot chew his food. His all half-eaten food goes into his tummy. He gets no nutrition from that because nothing is cut properly. It's all, his stomach cannot handle big chunks of food. It has to be made into fine things. So then where is the nutrition? And those caries tooth are a source of infection which go all over the body. And they get sepsis. So they found in the whole world that they have found mortality is very high in people who are not having good hygiene. That's dental hygiene. Mortality, not just a morbidity of this thing. This people die more if they have bad dental hygiene. Because each time you brush your teeth or, you know, fiddle with your teeth, you know, a whole lot of 10,000 bacteria enter into your body. Because everything is just, all the bacteria just sitting around right there. You just touch it, all of them enter into your body. Someone talks great about the teeth. But anyway, the kidney, once it fails, we know, patient becomes unconscious, renal coma, all the body swells up, and the heart cannot function. Heart is very strong. You know, I'm an athletic fellow. He's lifting 300 pounds every day. Heart is extremely strong. But kidney fails. The whole body swells up, and the heart drowns in the water. It cannot pump. And the brain is so important. But ultimately, even though all the organs are interdependent, we can see everything is, so there is something called as homeostasis, to keep everything in balance, But then everything is geared up ultimately to maintaining whom? This fellow, the brain. So the brain is the only organ which has got external protection and internal protection. So there is external protection which is strong, called the skull. So the moment somebody comes to hit you, we don't catch our tummy, we don't catch our leg. We just say, we first go and protect our, somebody comes with a chain or some hunter or some knife, said, do like this, right? Because this is the most important thing. You don't want someone to hit you here. You don't say like this, what if my stomach gets hit and I can't eat afterwards, you know? you go like this, right? You duck down. Because in reflexly, nature has made it that this is the most important organ to be protected first. When you have a bomb and you dive down and protect your head. So there is a blood-brain barrier. So whatever comes in the blood doesn't enter the brain. So there's an internal coating also called blood-brain barrier. So protection, which is the most important organ to be protected. So even though it is part of the homeostatic system, it is interdependent, but everything is geared yet for maintaining the brain. Inasmuch as even the Brahmanas are part of the system, everything is geared to maintain the Brahmanas, right? So in we will find like this in everything. You look at a broader, a little broader in nature, everything is independent. Everything is dependent on one another. Not knowing this, you know, when the sparrows start eating the crops in China, so many crops are being lost because sparrows come and finish off the crops. You shoot all the caps, shoot them all. Tack, 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 tack. They shot all the sparrows. It's problem is solved. Sparrows are killed, but then there are so many insects which they were eating also, and now the insects ate away all the crops. Because the sparrows are, you know, they have to eat, their food is also there, all these insects. So we think that, you know, sparrows are a problem. If you don't see the, in a problem-solving mechanism, if you don't see the role of the particular thing it is playing and you just shoot only on that and don't look at the whole picture, you'll make always make a mistake. Always. This is why problem-solving in the world doesn't really work at any level, at any time, at any point. And because they look only at the at one aspect. Okay, there is pollution, so plant more trees. Okay, plant more trees, fine. They're looking at a very, very narrow manner. As many trees you can do it, but nothing is going to happen. So, the trees are so important. If you look at the whole system, trees, there was one purport of Prabhupada, I don't remember which canto now, where Prabhupada talks extensively about value of trees. The trees are the one which actually will, you know, lead to giving of rain, and because of rain, then the oceans are filled, and oceans are filled, and there are clouds. So all the rain which we all need for the rain, for the crops, it all actually comes because the trees are there. The more you cut the trees, there is going to be less rain. Less rain means less food. Less food means starvation. Starvation means suffering and all that. So tree is so important. So in this way, everything is ultimately interdependent. But who is maintaining all this? There's one, everything is here. The sun. The source of everything is the sun. So like you have a garland. But you have a centerpiece also. So in this way, the entire nature, which is working so beautifully, but everything is maintained by the, ultimately by the source of all life in this material world is the sun. Is it not? Without the sun, there can be anything. It can be moon, there can be stars, there can be trees, nothing. Nothing will be there. Everything comes from the sun, right? So, in the entire unit, sun is most important. So, when we understand this system of interdependency, suppose you take example of practical example, Brahmachari Ashram. Of course, there are glorified people here who are preachers, college preachers and congregation preachers and all that. But ultimately, however glorified they may be, is there any less dependency on others? How much dependency is there? The preachers need some food to speak, is it not? They may have a lot of knowledge of all the slokas and the entire Bhagavatam is on their tongue. This is fantastic, wonderful. But then, if they don't have prasad to eat, they can't do anything. Right? Or there's no maintenance, there's no proper electricity, and you know, there are all dust everywhere and all. They cannot do anything. The radios are not being maintained, they have no inspiration. So the pujari department is dependent on this, and the prasadam department feeds everybody else. So in the whole Brahmachari Ashram also there is a interdependency. It's very, very clear. So there may be a people who are, a group of people who are recognized as more important, like the kidney or the brain or liver, more important. You know, then the blood, red blood corpuscles and all, you know, the white blood corpuscles, who don't even talks about them? There's one corpuscle, a small corpuscle. It's 7 microns in size, who even bothers about it? But everyone is playing its role. Without the red blood corpuscle, no one is going to carry the oxygen for you. To feed also, to give to the brain. Small corpuscle is carrying oxygen for you. Right? So in this way, everything in the Brahmachari Ashram also is interdependent. Now, why is this important to understand? When there is proper understanding of the principle of interdependency, that leads to a very important consequence. And that is pridelessness. When I understand that actually I am not the main guy here, but I am being helped from whatever I am doing by everybody else, then I don't feel very proud of myself, is it not? The preacher, if he recognizes that if I don't see beautiful deities every day, if I don't have good kirtan singers in my ashram, who can really have such nice kirtan to inspire my heart with the holy name, if I don't get beautiful ladies to see every day, nicely dressed, with good standards, then the preacher feels, if he doesn't get prasad properly, he will not feel interested. So when the preacher appreciates his dependency on others, he will not feel that I am the only main guy here who's doing things. Everyone else is less, TK. When his heart becomes broader, some of the people who are cooking prasadam, if they don't get to hear Bhagavatam classes, if they don't really get to, go on yatras, if they don't get, same thing, just everyone feels that I am not the main, I am dependent on so many people. Then don't feel very proud. Pride comes when a sense of exclusivity is there, then there's pride, right? That I am higher than anybody. In independency, there's a chain. And they changed which locket is more important. Which that pendant, this thing. Yeah, in the chain there are so many beads or whatever. And if there are so many beads, then which bead is most important? None of the beads are most important. Every bead is as important as the other because it is just the one chain which helps to connect with the previous one and the next one. So every bead in the chain is important. Every flower, however the beautiful the flower may be and the locket is looking very prominent, but every flower, every leaf is important. So that leads to pridelessness. Very important. And another important principle which comes up in understanding interdependency of anything is appreciation. I am not proud about what I am doing, but I also appreciate what everybody else is doing, in fact, to help me. In family life, what today happens many a times, by family life, is when the husband does not appreciate the hard labor of his wife in whatever she is doing. Or vice versa. In a family, if there is appreciation, or appreciation is something very different from flattery, of course. Appreciation is actually a manifestation, like you have malaria. What is malaria? Malaria is a symptom. Fever is a symptom of your germ in your body. Or coughing blood out is a manifestation of TB in your lungs. So what is appreciation? Appreciative speech, genuine appreciation in any circle of people is a manifestation of one very important content within your heart, and that is called as gratitude. When you have inner gratitude, it will always manifest itself externally as appreciation. When there is no appreciation, you can be sure that there is a significant deficiency of gratitude in that particular group. If I don't really appreciate anybody for what they were doing, Prabhu, nice kirtan, you flooded my heart with such exaltation when I'm singing the holy names. It was beautiful. And I just felt like dancing non-stop for half an hour. You appreciate the kirtan singer, you appreciate the burdang player, the beats he was giving. In a kirtan, a symphony, harmony. If only the kirtan was singing, you know, the burdang player is going, he is going in his own, you know, nice, sweet pace. If he's not keeping pace, he doesn't understand that I'm dependent, I'm supporting these people. Kartavala is knowing his own thing. Kirtan also, you can see dependency. Everything is dependent. But ultimately, the person who is doing kirtan is the most important. But he's dependent on other people as well for getting his sath, his support. So that leads to first pridelessness, and second is it leads to genuine appreciation. And that is so important in any society. Many a times, because lack of appreciation, people don't feel encouraged. People do sometimes so much for so many other people, but if there's somebody doesn't come and give a pat and said, wow, you're doing a great job here. Fantastic, you're doing wonderful. Like somebody was offering this, make this offering to Radhanath Swami, for example. Mahaprabhu Prabhu was saying that here is a person who's such a great leader, and one of his qualities that makes him a great leader is that he appreciates people for what they are. And his appreciation is so genuine that even though it may be appear like little Maharaj said a little more than you know what actually he is, you're doing so much, this, but that appreciation actually made a person, wherever he was, to try and shoot to that level. And eventually, after 5 years, 10 years, what appeared like, you know, a little more exaggerated type of response which was given, he actually reached that level after 10 years. Because he felt that sort of a encouraged response. He actually rose. He felt empowered to rise to higher levels. If you just tell the child, you are useless, see, you got 10th rank, you are so useless, you know. But it's nice, last time you got 12th, you got 10th. And you're ahead of 40 people who are behind you from the class of 50. You can go higher. You can try. So then the fellow feels encouraged. So appreciation is a mechanism actually to really empower a person to actually go higher in whatever he's doing. If somebody is chanting his rounds nicely and you just say, Prabhu, just sitting next to you was, today you made my day. Just sitting next to you, I felt so happy to just chant with you. Your chanting was so nice. We should say it. As they say, if you don't say it, it's like wrapping a gift and not giving it. You wrap a nice gift, put a card, put a rose on it, and put a nice ribbon on it, and you don't give it to the person then. And you feel, yes, I really appreciate this person. See, I wrapped this gift for him also. But you can give it to him. Go and give it to him. Let him feel loved from your heart. So appreciation is so nice in any genuine family environment. Is it not? Prabhupada, how did Prabhupada make people work the way they were working for him? I mean, due receipt of your letter, so and so, I'm very happy with whatever you're doing at Cambodia, whatever. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're doing. I'm very happy with you, whatever you're doing at this small. Please start a temple and Krishna will be very pleased with you and all the parampara will bless you and zoom, 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 zoom. He would give so much. Of course, he started a small temple there, which a small flat, whatever. It's just four walls maybe. But Prabhupada encouraged him and this. And soon he worked so hard and the whole center manifests there. So each and every letter of Prabhupada we see is filled with genuine deep appreciation. We don't know Prabhupada is flattering his disciples. Do we feel like that? No. There's deep appreciation of whatever little they are doing. That's a great soul. Krishna appreciates a small leaf we give him. Imagine. Where does it come from? It comes from deep appreciation for all his spirit souls. Tiny spirit souls who are just doing little tiny, but give him a little leaf. A little one petal of a rose. A little small glass of water. Imagine. How great is Krishna that he can appreciate a greatness of a person actually not by his power, his majesty or his pomp or his splendor. We can appreciate small things, that is his greatness. Ram can appreciate, he can appreciate Hanuman, but when Ram appreciates the squirrel, that is Ram's greatness more. Anyone can appreciate Hanuman. He doesn't take a big intelligence. Oh, see Hanuman, he's 50,000 tons he's lifting at one time. But only a great man can appreciate a squirrel at work. Right? That's why Ram is so great. He could see what others could not see. Anybody was seeing the squirrel? Nobody was seeing the squirrel. But Ram was seeing the squirrel as well. So Krishna is seeing everyone giving a small leaf to him. That's what Nectar Devotion says. That's the quality of nobility. Nobility means if somebody does something for you, you don't ever forget it. That's nobility. A small favor done to you, you never forget. Any after 10 years, that I remember the prasad you gave me at your place. Adana Maharaj was remembering. I used to come to Bhakti Kala Kshetra and used to make nice salad made of chiku and condensed milk. What he was eating 20 years back, he was remembering and appreciating. Never forgot. Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never forgot. Mahaprakash Leela. Somebody is arranging pots. Now, arranging pots is not a big thing. But it takes a great man, a great person like Mahaprabhu to see that somebody is arranging pots so that I can be, bathed with Abhishek. Who will see Dukhi? Anybody can see Dukhi? Everyone says Nityan Prabhu is here, Adyota Acharya is here, Radha Shtakur is here, Mukunda is singing. Everyone can see that they are the main people who are doing all this show. The entire Mahaprakash Leela. But here is a person who is not seeing all. Of course, he's seeing them, but he's seeing the people who others are not seeing. I will give you love of God because you're arranging pots. Appreciation. Appreciation. Our whole culture is based on appreciation. Krishna appreciating his devotees, the Guru appreciating his disciples, disciples appreciating this Guru. God was appreciating their God brothers. The whole culture of genuine deep appreciation. And appreciation leads to another fallout, byproduct. We're talking about what happens in what makes a family unit really work. Interdependency, when you understand that principle, interdependency, that makes you feel less proud. When you feel less proud and you feel more appreciative of people who are working for you. Right? Appreciative. The more you appreciate, the more you develop a grateful heart, because that's the essence of bhakti. A grateful heart will automatically allow you to assimilate more mercy, is it not? Gratitude is considered like a fertilizer of the soul. Like every ground needs fertilizer to grow better crops. The soul, the consciousness, which is the field of the soul, also needs to be nourished by the fertilizer of gratitude. The more there is gratitude, the more the soil becomes fertile and there's more ability to absorb the nutrients which will be given to it. Right? What does fertilizer really do? It improves the nutrient absorbing capacity of the soil. It by itself has no role. But whatever is given in terms of water and other things are given, which are already present in the ground, Mother Earth has given. But when fertilizer is put, then it improves the ability to absorb those nutrients. Similarly, when mercy is given, if there's no gratitude, mercy will not be absorbed. Just go away. So because of this gratitude which you developed, appreciative, this thing, the important fallout is that when there is so much appreciation in the environment, in the atmosphere, there is no criticism. When there's so much appreciation going on of each other, then you're just filled with so much of positivity in the environment, everyone is talking good about each other, then there is no room for critical exhibition. Nobody is critical. So imagine a society, imagine a group, imagine a unit where there is nobody is proud, where everyone is appreciating, there is immense gratitude for all the people who are around, and there is no criticism. What will happen to such a unit? What do you think will really happen to such a unit? Just flourish. It will grow organically. It will fulfill all its goals. Whatever the goal of the unit is, it will fulfill most beautifully. And that is the essence of Vaishnava society. That is the essence of family life. That's the essence of everything in Krishna consciousness. Of course, when you have a garland, a lot of beads or a chain, there is one unseen thing which is going through all this, which is the wire or the thread. As Krishna says, this is the Sutra Mani Gana Eva. There is a sutra. So what is that sutra? The invisible thing which is going around. Invisible sutra is the principle of love. It is love. It is love which makes all these things happen. When there is love, then all these things are there. When there is no genuine love, there cannot be all these feelings. So, in a family unit, for example, when there is genuine love, today, people marry and people have love marriages and all those sort of things, but there is no love. Even though it is labeled as love marriage, but it is conspicuous by the absence of love, in fact. If love was there, why would it ever break? When there is love, nothing breaks, because love is a binder, love is a force. Love brings people together. Love never breaks. You find ever love broke things? Love always binds. Even if Krishna is somewhere in another part of the world and gopis are elsewhere, they never broke apart. Because there's an invisible thread of love binding their hearts. Even when the husband is dead, gone to some other planet, some other species, wife never forgets. A grateful wife. Love. The souls are still bound. The janam janam ka saath, they say. Whatever. And the Guru Maharaj goes away to the spiritual sky, the disciple never forgets. Distance-wise, Guru is in the spiritual sky, you are in the languishing in the material world. What is there? But do you feel some unity? Unity of? Because based on? So love never breaks. Love is a binder. Love is a uniter. Love is a harmonizer. So the invisible principle which makes all this really happen is love. So in a brahmachari ashram, if there is love for the guru, all this will happen. And on the entire cosmic level, if there is love for Krishna, then all this will happen, what we are talking about. So we cannot eliminate the element of bhakti. Impersonal understanding of just interdependency and appreciation will not really work. We have to bring the personal aspect of God in the picture. It's only it is love for Him. Like in a joint family, everyone loves the grandfather or the grandmother, and that is one which binds everything. Right? Similarly, when there is love for Krishna, then all these things really happen. When there is love for Guru, then all the disciples will automatically unite. When there is love for other Gurus, automatically their disciples will also unite. So much love we felt for Jayapadak Maharaj, because he came to the hospital automatically we felt so close to his disciples. There's a lot of love. We don't know his disciples, you know, but we just met them. Oh, you're Japatak Maharaj. A lot of love was generated. Huh? Right? So in this way, the principle of love makes people come together. And that is the essence of bhakti. Bhakti means to really love. Love Krishna, love Krishna's creation, love Krishna's parts and parcels, love the chandalas, love the dogs, love the outcasts, love everybody. Huh? And when you love all these people, then as Prabhupada says in the purport, then you maintain them also, give them some money and this and that. And those are details which come up automatically. So I just thought I'll just talk about broader principles of ideal life, ideal family life, which will make us always understand our interdependence on each other. Here we all, Radha Gopi temple, we are a family. And no one here is really a great person. Everyone is playing his role in different wonderful ways. And to appreciate each other's role we are playing, however small, is what makes the family unit work together nicely. And the binder is love for Radha and Krishna as Radha Gopinath. When we all love Radha Gopinath, all this will really happen. Sorry if I did not really touch the top subject here, but spoke on a different note. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? Any comments? Granthra Srimad Bhagavat Puran ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.